What a fast night. Okay, Fright Night Friday now into Saturday morning open lines. So get ready for more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, and let's go right back to the phones. First-time caller line, thanks for joining us. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Oh, my God, it's you. This is so exciting. This is the first time I'm calling.
Well, I'm glad you. What finally sparked your interest to call?
Well, I have a couple scary stories. First of all, my name is Terry. I'm calling from Pahrump, Nevada.
Well, Art Bell's old hometown, huh?
Yes, sure is. My scary story, let me give you a little background. It goes back to the early 70s when times were quite different then. I had gone to school to get my certification to be an EMT. And in those days, it wasn't very common for women to do those kind of jobs, believe it or not. That's the way it was back then. And I was having a hard time finding a job because I was a woman. And one of the private companies, ambulance companies that I went to apply for a job at, the guy said to me, right in the middle of my interview, he got a call, and he said, I'll tell you what, come on this call with me, and if you can handle this, you can have the job. But he didn't tell me that it was a call for a decomposed body that had been sitting out in the summer sun for like 10 days in an apartment.
Yuck.
You know, and all these cops were standing around when I walked in with the cot, and they're looking at me like, what the heck is she doing here,
yeah,
you know?
Like, I mean, like, are you going to do this?
Right. And it was like, they're looking at me, like, giggling and laughing, like, expecting me to go running and screaming out of there. And I thought to myself, self, if I want this job. So I gripped my teeth and I bared it and I went in and did what I had to do with the guy. Needless to say, I got the job. But that kind of thing happened all the time wherever there was an incident because this company had a contract with the coroner's office, so we had to pick up a lot of bodies, which wasn't my favorite thing to do, but had to do it. One of the other cases we had to pick up this guy that was shot, and he was laying face down, and there again, the cops were all around.
and did they know you were the rookie?
Yep.
Okay.
They knew I was the rookie, yep, and the woman on top of it.
Yeah.
But the weirdest thing is when we turned this guy over, George, he went, and I just about,
freaked.
I'm telling you, you know how when you get lightheaded and your heart goes into your mouth and you just feel like you're going to pass out, you know? I couldn't believe it. And that was pretty scary. To me, that was very scary.
I assume he then died, right?
Oh, he was dead.
Oh, what do you mean? How could he be dead? It sounded like he was breathing.
Yeah, when he turned him over, he just went, ah. I found out later what it was. He was shot in the chest. So when you turn him over, all the air came out of
the
his
air.
Lungs.
I see.
But
okay.
I didn't know that. And there I was hearing that, thinking, okay, this guy's supposed to be dead, and all of a sudden he's breathing like that.
Yeah, okay.
That was pretty scary. But the scariest thing of all was we also had to pick up, like, normal hospital people that passed away in hospitals or at home. And we picked up this one woman that we had to take to the coroner's office. And the procedure was we laid them out on the slab there, this scale kind of thing, took the sheets off of them, threw them out, and we got another sheet and started making up our cot. Well, we laid this woman out. Her eyes were closed. I made up my cot. I turned around, and her eyes were wide open.
How did that happen? The old reflex or what?
Yeah, it was the old reflex. I found out later that's what it was. But there again, I just thought I was just going to die. I thought I was going to be the one on the slab next after seeing that, you know?
Are most people, when they die, aren't their eyes open?
Yeah, usually. That's the way it is. But the guy that worked at the coroner's office told me, oh, this happens all the time. You're lucky she didn't sit up on you.
That happens too? You mean that they've had those kinds of things happen?
Yeah, where people actually sit up because the muscles tighten. Isn't that nuts?
but they're dead, right?
Yeah, but they're dead.
That is incredible. All right, thanks. Good to have you as a first-time caller. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
George?
Yes, sir. Welcome to the show.
Hi, George. This is James calling from Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, hi.
Hey, I got a Mothman story for you, or at least I think it was a Mothman.
When I was in the Denver area?
Oh, no. At the time, I lived in El Paso, Texas.
Okay.
And I guess I was probably about 10 years old, and, you know, kids are, I just always wanted to fly. You know, it's like, okay, well, if I, like, spread my jacket out and hold it in my hands and flap, you know, I could fly. Well, I started having these dreams where I was flying. And all of a sudden, there was this guy that had actually had wings that would, well, I'm going to teach you how to fly. And he would take me places. And, you know, I'd wake up in the morning and everything was all cool. And then I started waking up, scratches. I woke up with a broken arm. And my mom's like, you know, think I'm sneaking out of the house, you know, with my friends. And I got hurt. And this happened for like 2 or 3 years. I mean, where I'm just constantly, every day I wake up hurt somehow, some way. I mean, it was the craziest thing.
Now, do you think this creature was hurting you or was, you know, dropping you when you were flying or things like that?
You know, in the morning when I woke up, I had no recollection of, like, where I went or, you know, anything like that. It's like, I had no clue how I got hurt.
Yeah, how,
like I said,
bizarre.
It happened for a couple of years. And then my mom, just one night when we was out cruising around, my mom just showed up and made this dude back off. And
Whoa. You mean your mother saw this?
She came, like, in my dream.
Ah, okay.
And made this, you know, like, I don't know, you know, what happened. It was like my mom showed up. Next thing you know, I'm back in my bed. And I'm 46 years old now, and my mom just recently passed away, and now I'm starting to have, you know, these dreams are starting to come back again. So I don't know if, like, my mom was protecting me all these years.
How come you're not mentioning? Let me ask you some questions about this.
Sure, go ahead.
How come you're not mentioning anything about your father?
Well, my dad was in the military, so, you know, he traveled a lot. My mom just got tired of us traveling with him. So she, you know, made my dad buy us a house, and we stay there while he did all the travel.
And it was just you and your mom?
Well, I had some brothers and sisters also.
Is it possible that they were beating you up?
My siblings?
Yeah.
Oh, no. They, it's like, we converted the garage into a bedroom for me.
Yeah.
And they all lived in like the main house, so they wasn't close to me. I mean, but like the scratches were, like, you know, when I thought about it all these years, it's like going through trees or bushes.
Sure.
And like I said, in El Paso, they have, you know, if you want to call them mountains, they're like basically straight up and down. But they used to do a lot of, like, copper mining out there. You know, and you know, some dreams that I've had is like, okay, I remember, you know, vaguely a cave. So apparently, like, this thing must have lived in this cave.
You know, weird.
I'd wake up dirty. You know, it's like I had all these, like I said, I had no clue.
But in your dreams, it never really intentionally tried to hurt you, right?
No, it was like. Whatever, like, this thing was, acted like he was my friend.
Yeah, he was having a great time taking you around places.
Right. To me, that's the way it seemed. And, you know, I after my mom intervened in this, which I still don't know how, when I questioned her, she just, like, never answered any of my questions.
Did she admit it, though?
No, she just, the next morning when I woke up after that, all she asked me was, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I guess. And then I asked her, well, how'd you get in my dream? And she goes, you know, just kind of looked at me and walked away.
As if she knew she was in your dream.
Right. It's like, I don't know, because I asked her if she was, you know, psychic or whatever. Because, like, she always knew where me and my sister was and who we was with, even though she was at work. She could be out of town and knew where I was.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. I like that. I always, and the thing, reason I asked you about your father and your siblings, I want to always rule out these other possibilities. I mean, you said when you woke up with a broken arm, I mean, one of the first things I thought about was, you know, somebody's there breaking your arm, somebody's abusing you. And once you rule those things out, as tough as they may be to even ask, then you have to start looking at the unusual. So appreciate you being part of the program. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello there. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for calling.
Fantastic. My name is Clinton. I'm calling from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Yes, sir.
And I thought I'd call you. I got a short little story, actually, but
okay.
It's something I've kept with me over the past couple of years, and I've always wondered if this happened to somebody else. I was out at a movie with some friends, and we came back to my house, and my two roommates were there, standing in the doorway of my bedroom. They're both named Lee, oddly enough. And I leaned forward to turn my computer on. I was sitting in my chair. I have a computer in my bedroom. I leaned forward to turn on my computer, and before I could even get to the computer, suddenly, from the computer speakers, I could hear a sound. It was really loud, like a pig. It started squealing, like, squealing, like, and it did that for, like 7 seconds, and we all just froze. And I turned and looked at my friends, and they were looking at me, and then we were just, like, stunned, like, what was that? And I, to this day, I don't know. It's the strangest story because, you know, you usually hear, like, a disembodied voice or something, but never, like, a pig squealing. So I was wondering if maybe your listeners had ever heard of anything.
That's
like
weird.
That.
Give me the pig snout sound again.
Okay, he goes.
You do that well.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Also, I had an idea.
Yeah.
Maybe you could try that. I was thinking you have JC calling all the time. Maybe sometime you should have like a JC sound-alike contest. Have people call in and try.
Oh man,
JC.
I got to tell you, hearing him is enough. But I am told, you know, I'm here in St. Louis. I'm going to be back in LA in a couple of weeks. I am told that he may have accepted my offer to debate, basically, the Devil Channeler. Wouldn't that be an incredible moment?
That would be fantastic.
Yeah. JC against the Devil Channeler. You got that right. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Clovis, California.
Clovis, okay. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, George, I talked to you last night. I'm the one that has the haunted family.
How did you get through? You're only allowed once a month.
Really?
Well, the fact that you got through, I'm not gonna hang up on you. That's
oh, great.
Not my style. Go ahead.
Well, I want to tell you about my murder.
Your murder?
Yeah.
What do you mean? You were murdered?
Yeah. Now listen to this.
All right.
I went to bed one night, and as I was laying there, something hit me in the head really, really hard, like with a baseball bat. And I woke up. Nothing had hit me, but it was the hardest I'd ever been hit in my life. It just rang my bell, and I know if something would have really hit me that hard, I would have died.
How bizarre.
And this happened like 3 times in a row. And then about a week later, my wife wakes up screaming, and I go, what? She goes, something hit me in the head. And I went, did it hit you really hard? She goes, yeah, whatever it was, it felt like it would have killed me. And I went, yeah, that's been happening to me.
In your sleep?
Well, right when you drift off into REM sleep. This is the first, you know, few minutes of sleep.
Do you hear a sound with this?
You just get the big bang. You know, you get your head beaten in. It feels like it crushed your head.
See, I hear a gong, but I don't have the smashed in the head bit.
No, a tremendous blow. The hardest I'd ever been hit in my life.
I mean, I wake up in the morning to see if anybody was at the door, and there's nobody around. Ever. It's weird.
Yeah, this blew me away.
Yeah, also, this thing would have given you a concussion.
I didn't have any lasting after effects from it.
No, let's hope not.
Yeah. Also, I'm a musician, and I have an in-home recording studio.
What do you play? All kinds of instruments?
Everything.
Good for you.
And I have a real powerful digital studio, so I said, I'm going to do an EVP test. So I turned my microphone on high as I can get it. Everything was real quiet, and I whispered, talk to me. You know, because if you say it loud, it'll just boom me out because everything's so turned up so high. So then I play it back and I hear, it's my house. And I went, whoa. So I was blown away by that. So the next night I went, I did the same thing, turned it on. I go, it's your house. And then I played it back and he went, it's your house too.
I love it.
It was crazy.
I love it. Hey, what's your favorite instrument that you play?
Guitar.
Do you have it close by?
No, I got it locked up right now.
Darn. Yeah. What do you have that's close by? I love people who play music.
Oh, I'm really good at it, too. I've been doing it for 25 years.
I mean, do you have anything like a trumpet or anything like that?
No, it's all strings.
Everything's string. How about a violin?
No, just maybe on a keyboard.
My uncle used to play the violin, God rest his soul. What a great instrument that is, huh?
Yeah, you know, music's really powerful. It has I think it has a dark side to it, though.
Oh, what do you mean by that? You mean all the time or just the people who are on the dark side?
Well, have you ever done any backwards, playing anything backwards?
Yeah, we've done that. Reverse speech and things like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there that's just clear as a bell. It's not it's actually just plain as day.
Remember the old Beatles one?
I
buried Paul.
You know, we did that to television commercials and everything, and it's in everything. It really is.
Subliminal programming.
It's just wild. It really scared me.
Listen to Coast to Coast. Listen to Coast to Coast. Did you hear that? I did. I wonder where that came from.
Came from George Norrie.
You got it. Okay, thanks for the call.
All righty, bye-bye.
You have a great weekend. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Oh.
Yes.
This is me?
It is you. Hi, you.
It is me. Well, first I'd like to say, George, amazing. All these years and just fabulous. But I'd like to say to you that the trucker that mentioned that he saw the Coast to Coast truck tonight was kind of interesting. One thing I have to ask you, George, is why you've never had a show or anyone on about Gurdjieff.
About what?
Gurdjieff. He's a philosopher.
Oh, Gurdjieff. He's a philosopher.
George Ives Gurdjieff.
And why do you like him so much?
Well, I like him so much because he is the beginning of most of all of what we know today as New Age thinking. He came up with things like the term "be here now," things like that. Anyhow, what I wanted to talk to you about tonight was this interesting little thing that I had happen to me when I was about 13 years old, and I'm 49 right now, and I've never forgotten it.
I've got a minute left, so take it away.
All right, so we were kids, and we were experimenting with everything, and so we got a hold of this friend's sister's satanic ritual book, and we did a blood ritual.
Oh my God.
Which means we drew a pentagram around a circle, and we had to have a certain candle, and we did what we were supposed to do. And stupidly, we, like the Ouija board, we didn't know what we were doing. And about 3 hours later, we got a phone call by this guy named Maynard, and he expressed to us that if we didn't destroy what we just created, that we would not know how much trouble we would have created and to do what he is told us.
How did Maynard even know about this?
That's the interesting part. Is that there's no possible way that this person, Maynard, could have known about this.
I wonder, is his full name was Maynard G. Krebs? Maybe. I'll be back in a moment. Yes, I've got a little surprise for you in just a moment, but let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there, if they're there. Are you there? Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, my name's Steve. I'm calling from New Orleans.
Yes, sir.
Last year after Katrina, we went in and this lady and husband family hired us to tear out her sheetrock and put her new sheetrock in and take care of everything. And she says, oh, and don't mind the ghosts. He won't bother you. We said, yeah, okay. We laughed, you know, because I'm from here, you know.
Sure, and, I understand.
So we rip everything out and we put the sheetrock back in and they was there. We was priming all the sheetrock, and she says, I hope you're not leaving it that color. I said, no. I said, that's just the primer. She says, yeah, because the ghost ain't going to like that. And I said, what do you mean? She says, he don't like that. You know, when he don't like the color of a bedroom, he gets kind of upset. And I started laughing, and I said, yeah, okay. I said, well, we'll paint it tomorrow. And we never left no paint in the house or nothing.
Yeah.
And when we came back the next day, that room was painted a different color.
You mean the ghost actually took matters into its own hands?
The paint was already on the wall, a color. It was like an off-brown color. And we never had that color paint in the house, and we never had no paint in the house at all except primer.
How strange. Now, what was the color like? Did it look good?
It was like a brownish color, brownish-red color. And
that doesn't look very good. It's not very...
No, she came in, and she says, whoa, I don't like this color. I said, well, who painted it? Y'all came last night and painted it or something? She says, no, you're the only one who has the keys. I said, well, we never painted this.
Oh, my God. You sure she wasn't pulling your leg?
No, she wasn't. She was serious.
My gosh.
And then come to find out, before she told me, before they bought the house, that, before that, her son used, that was his room, and they used to sit in there and watch him, and he'd be having conversations with a ghost.
So it's still there, changing the paint. I wonder what it was like during the flood period, too. I wonder if it left for a while.
I don't know.
Just stuck it out. Okay, yeah, that's a great story. Thanks.
Right,
appreciate you being on Coast to Coast. In a moment, by the way, we're going to play for you one of these very old tapes from Perfect Possession. It's Art Bell talking with Malachi Martin and taking a call or two as well. As you know, we are offering a double CD to those who subscribe to the After Dark newsletter. If you want to do that, there's you can go to the website for that. That's not my main reason for telling you about this. But this being Fright Night Friday into Saturday, it's a perfect reason, perfect excuse to play a little bit of this Malachi Martin. I think of all the guests that Art has had over the years, and me as well, Father Malachi Martin was probably the most compelling, probably the scariest, probably the most natural, because when he spoke from the heart. He spoke from reality, and his message, his story, was very scary. We'll be back in a moment with a bit of Father Malachi Martin. And now, just a wee bit of Father Malachi Martin.
Well, I'm curious about something, caller. You advertised yourself as an atheist when you first called.
Yes, sir.
I understand an agnostic. I understand somebody who has not been able to quite make the leap of faith necessary to be one with God. But I don't understand an atheist. That's somebody, by definition, who believes there is no such thing as God. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I do not believe in God. I do not believe in the devil. If you don't believe in one, you can't believe in the other.
That's right.
You know, you're not a devil worshiper just because you're an atheist.
Right, I understand.
I'm a good person. I would treat my son right and wrong. But in the old saying in Missouri, I am a show me person.
Yes.
I just can't quite grasp the concept of faith. You know, I just can't quite grasp it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the old coin trick behind the ear where you say, where'd it go? I've got it. You know, I don't believe in magic. I don't believe in faith. I wish I could. I mean, I am envious of people who believe in everlasting life.
I'll tell you something.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'll tell you something. We said it to somebody earlier who was on with Art and myself. If I would like to love you, it's the beginning of love.
Mm-hmm.
And if I would like to believe, it's the beginning of belief. Because otherwise you'd say, I don't give a damn about it. Do you understand me what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
So there's something there. And look, I don't know your personal life, and probably God will never give us the chance of consorting with and revealing each other to each other. But he has a plan for you because you're a good man.
Yes, sir.
And you're doing a good duty, and he will reveal himself to you in his own way. It won't be, probably, the way he reveals himself to Art Bell or to me, or to Art's wife or Art's mother, whatever it is. But you have found God already. You're not calling him God. And I'll be praying for you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. The question was, what was on earth, if anything, before man. Father, you said that Satan and his disciples were here, but you said there were others as well.
Yes, the I take it, Art, that the phrase you used just now, on earth, is just refers to the tridimensional existence that we know.
Yes, sir.
Our senses.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now what impedes our minds understanding the answer to Daniel's question, Daniel from Austin's question, is the fact that our minds and our education has been geared, as it were, programmed on the idea of evolution, Darwin's evolution, the Darwinian idea of evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a mythical idea, and it has nothing to do with reality and doesn't explain reality, but it does. It's in our minds. And it blocks our intelligence. If you read, and I may seem to be rambling, Art, but I'm not really. If you read the first 12 chapters of Genesis, particularly the first 6 or 7 of them,
mm-hmm.
you will find that interlaced with the names and supposedly historical references, there are phrases and sentences which suppose the existence of beings for which we have no names. They're called the sons of men and the sons of God, the Bnei Elohim, as they call it in the Hebrew, and the daughters of men, etc., and the giants that lived in those days. You find all this. And the old Yahvist writer, the old writers, composing, putting this Bible together in the 9th century B.C., from the records they had, were doing their best to make a coherent statement, and all they could do was gather testimony. What I was referring to was this, that it would seem, it will take a long time to explain it, though, it would seem that the universe as we know it today, you and I and Daniel and the rest of us, is a reconstruction of a universe that was almost destroyed by the first phase of God's creation, namely the angelic world. And the very form of our bodies, is an ad hoc restoration by God. And we won't have this sort of a body when we're in heaven. We will have our bodies, but not this sort of a body. Now, the reconstruction implies that the revolt of Lucifer and the angels that went with him, the Bible says one third, but, you know, the Bible's numbers are just numerically interesting. It says that they revolted and they almost destroyed the first handiwork of God. And there was a restoration in view of the coming of Christ later on, much later on. Now, what existed before that, what was destroyed by this terrible war, this terrible revolt by the first creatures that came from God's hands, whom we call angels. Angel itself is an ad hoc name, as we say. There's nothing specific about it at all. And it's very hard to be specific about an angel. But anyway, the beings that existed and the forms they took, we have no human words for it. Those chapters of Genesis, the early chapters, they try to fix names like the sons of God, the Bnei Elohim, and Bnei Ha'adam, and the daughters of men, and the sons of God, and the giants, etc. They're all hawk names they also were at a loss because we would not recognize them as human in our sense of the word, because what is human for us is something with legs and arms and a belly and genitals and a head and arms and exiting from the birth canal of a woman. But then what we're left with and where we can track it, but it's a difficult and a long tracking process, is this, that there is this middle plateau, which is the remnant of the old original creation, created material cosmos, and that on that plateau, Lucifer and his crowd still function and will until the last day of this cosmos, when it's all blown away by the breath of Christ's mouth, and only heaven and hell exist. Now, that may not be much of an explanation, but at least just to start, it's the first level of an expression or explanation of what I meant.
Help you out, caller?
I was wondering if you had very much problem dealing with those type of entities that are leftovers.
If I stay with my protection, no. If I step outside my protection, yes, I have what can be literally called a hell of an amount of trouble.
Okay. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Hello.
I myself have been practicing Wicca for a number of years.
Yes.
And in growing up, I was around many people who had, I guess in one way or another, stepped into the occult. You know, my mother was into astrology. My father was part of the Rosicrucians back in the 70s.
Yes.
And my wife was featured in a book called Something in the Blood. It was about vampiric lifestyles. And in dealing with all that, I found out on the market, you know, I read it quite a bit,
mm-hmm.
and I found a void in books that deal with occult crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am putting together a manuscript on a book, and I've researched occult crimes quite exhaustingly.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a question for you, Father.
Yes.
I found that many of the people who do commit these horrid crimes
mm-hmm.
Were tormented as children. You know, we're right. probably picked on in school,
right.
had abusive parents.
Right. That's right. That's right. You're right there.
Do you feel that perhaps, in your opinion, the devil or demons have been pushing at them since they were children, or is this something that the parents have pushed on and they have simply found an opening to grasp the soul
yeah.
of these people?
The analysis, the only analysis for the moment that satisfies me, satisfies what I have found anyway, is as follows. You see, if you abuse a child,
mm-hmm.
The child can take it one way or another. Now, supposing the child is, say, 4, 5, something like that, or even 6, but anyway, in that young age, out of infancy, but not quite in boyhood or youthhood, if they take it badly, they can fall under the influence of the demon.
Mm-hmm.
If they take it well, which they can, they don't. And what's the deciding factor? Their free will. And that's where there's an initial act of will. I think that everybody who comes into existence in this world, sheer infancy is one thing, where you simply, your mother is your world and her breasts are everything for you, and you're just that. But once you start getting any knowledge, any appreciation of the world outside you as outside you, there comes a moment, some stark personal moment all by yourself when you make a decision, and I think you make a decision between light and darkness. There's a man called Jean-Paul Richter, a German writer. He's dead now, but he said that he was born in the Black Forest. His father was a woodcutter,
uh-huh.
and they lived in a small hut, and there was a pile of manure outside their door always because his father had horses to drag the lumber. And he went out one morning when he was about two and a half or three years, and he stood and climbed on top of the manure just to look out because it was an easy thing to climb. And he heard the cock crowing, and he saw the first rays of sunlight over the tops of the pine trees. And he heard himself say to himself, "Ich bin ein Ich. I am an I am a self. I am me." That sort of a moment of choice. Well, I think that once you exercise free will, the point is that you can make a choice at that early age, which puts you within the realm of the demon. Or you can make a choice and put you in the realm of the angels. And why you make that choice, I do not know. I do not know the factors. I do not know. I think free will is the most extraordinary gift and the most dangerous gift we have.
Father, I have a question for you.
Sure.
It concerns the Vatican's intense, almost obsessive interest with astronomy.
Yes.
In Arizona, the Vatican, despite environmental obstacles that mm-hmm. would not normally be overcome mm-hmm. By anybody else, in yeah. conjunction with the University of Arizona, yes. muscled its way onto Mount Graham
yes.
and constructed an observatory.
Yes.
Can you enlighten me at all as to why they have such an obsessive interest in astronomy?
Yes, I can. In general terms, Art, the reason is this. They've always had this, by the way. They've always had an observatory. Not always. It dates from about the 9th century A.D. But there's intense interest now in astronomy because of the contents of some of the secret revelations they claim were made in this century about the near future, involving the stars, involving astronomical data. It's about as general a statement as I'd be allowed to make.
Oh, I think I can read that one quite well.
Okay, I'm sure you cannot. But there definitely is an interest of, because they're looking for the evidence they need to decide that certain things must be done.
That's Fright Night for Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lauder, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.